Dan Gilroy is out with a new film called Velvet Buzzsaw. Like his last movie, Nightcrawler, Gilroy is the writer and director. And also like his last film, this one stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Rene Russo. Gyllenhaal plays an art critic. Russo plays a gallery owner. In this scene, they're on the phone.
Meanwhile, I'm signing new talent.
Heard you got Damra. She's fierce.
And this morning, Martilla Splood.
We are on the same frequency, I swear. GoPro Kindergarten's gonna break big.
Your lips, God's ear. Oh, wait. In our world, you are God.
Velvet Buzzsaw is a comedy and also a horror movie where the killer is the art.
Help! Help!
Dan Gilroy told me he always intended this movie to paint with a broad brush.
We're campy, we're kitschy, we're satire. The film is, I believe, meant to be fun. You know, I think there's some really serious themes and ideas in this, but at the same time, I think humor can be a very powerful avenue to transmit an idea. So I love that we're in that realm.
There he is. More.
How do you?
It's Kenji, as you probably know.
What made you think that the art world was ripe for skewering? And I realize skewering might not be the best word to describe a movie with such a high body count, but there we are.
Well, the original germ of the idea came from just being in a contemporary art museum near closing, and there was a lot of contemporary art that had a sort of a dark tone to it, and I thought this would be an interesting world to set, a thriller, so that was the original genesis of it. I like to do films now that have some sort of thematic relevance to me, and the contemporary art was a movement that really began to challenge and to provoke, and it's been co-opted by big business and money.
But the wealthy vacuum up everything, except crumbs. The best work is only enjoyed by a tiny few.
And I saw it as a world off its axis. It seems like a world that's sort of teetering, and the people within the world know it, and there's an interesting dramatic tension in that that I thought worked really well with the thriller element of it.
And was it always kind of a stand-in for your own experience in Hollywood, trying to make movies that sell, that are also artistically sound, you know, the same tensions we see playing out in the film? Have they played on
your
own life?
I like to think there's a parallel. I mean, I was interested in exploring the relationship between art and commerce, and I think it's a very uneasy relationship in general. The quality of a work shouldn't be judged by the first weekend of box office or the number of people who've seen it online or the amount paid at Sotheby's. Success doesn't diminish your work, but it doesn't define it either. And I think that's something that I wanted to explore.
But that's such a hard line to walk, right? Because if nobody sees a film or a play or a piece of art, I mean, does that make it more like valuable than the thing that sells for millions of dollars at Sotheby's?
I don't think it makes it more valuable. I went through a personal experience. I worked on the epic debacle Superman Lives, and I worked on it for a year and a half, and they finally pulled the plug on it 2 weeks before shooting, and I went down to Santa Monica, and I was sitting at the beach. For a year and a half, I've worked on the script, and I was watching the waves, and I thought, I could have written the words on the beach and had the water wash them away, and it was a real sobering thought.
Gestation implies birth. Ideas come, but they kill themselves as soon as they appear. This is a slaughterhouse.
And shortly thereafter, I said to myself, it doesn't matter. As a creator, it was a valuable experience. I got something out of it. I've grown as a writer. When I got up from the beach, I sort of decided that I was going to do things as much for myself as for other people. And I think it's important to always know that art of any sort is more than a commodity.
We don't sell durable goods. We peddle perception, thin as a bubble.
Yes, hopefully everybody's art can generate enough money to pay their rent and take care of their needs. And if it gets bigger than that, more power to you. But if it doesn't, never lose sight of the fact that you're investing something into it that has meaning. Really, if there's any sort of central theme to the film, it's that art is more than a commodity. Artists invest a part of their soul in their work, and it has value on that level.
It's also interesting, then, that this film is coming out on Netflix, where you know, there's not going to be opening weekend box office numbers, right?
Right. When I was trying to decide whether to go with them or not, I went online. And there was a first sort of, there was a story about somebody who said, oh, Netflix is going to destroy the theatrical experience. And there were 50 comments that followed. And they were all like, oh, you must live in Los Angeles or New York because I don't get to see all these movies that you're getting to see. And I suddenly realized Netflix has democratized the film-going experience. And as a storyteller, I just want people to see the film. Yes, I would love everybody to see the film in an IMAX theater with pristine sound. That's just not going to happen. So the idea of two or four or one person sitting and watching this film in the comfort of their home, that's fine with me.
Okay, so to get back to the actual content of the film, I have to ask about these characters' names, because the character played by Jake Gyllenhaal is named Morph. The character played by Rene Russo is named Rhodora. The right. artist they discover is named Vetrel. I don't want to offend any listeners who are named Vetrel, but where did these names come from?
First of all, I like unusual names because I'm an enormous Charles Dickens fan.
Huh.
And I love the character names that he would come up with for his characters. And so Morph van der Waal sort of came after a lot of thought. Rhodora, the Rhodora is a flower. And I think it's Emerson.
It's like related to a rhododendron or something like that?
Yeah, something. And I think it was Emerson who wrote a poem about the Rhodora.
Tell me all about Vetrel Dees. His name is a tinsel on the tree.
Vetrel Dees.
Sounds like an anatomical part or something.
I did a movie that never got made set in the South in the 1800s, and I got a list of census rolls, and one of the names on the census from like 1842 was Vetrel Dees, and I used that from that.
How did you make the art that we end up seeing on screen?
About 6 months before we started shooting, my art advisor who came on the movie, David Hundley, and I started to create, it's over 100 pieces of original art that fell into two categories. There is this central deceased artist named Vetrel Dees. We needed to create a body of work for him, and then we needed to create all the art that surrounds, you know, Art Basel and the galleries, and we hired artists to create original pieces of art, and it was quite an undertaking. That was a big part of the film. Jim Bissell, our production designer, was deeply involved in this as well.
Was there any piece of art that at the end of filming you took home for yourself?
No. It's all right now sitting in a storage facility that I'm not sure what I should do with. It's some of it's creepy, some of it's not my taste. There's a 2-ton, 6-foot solid chrome sphere that's sitting there that I don't know what to do with.
It creates this unique sensation depending on each person and whatever hole they decide to explore, just like life.
I'm very uncertain what to do with it all, to be honest.
After watching this movie, I would be afraid to send anyone to that storage facility.
And certainly not at night.
I realize the film has been out for less than 24 hours, but have you had reaction from the fine art community?
I've had no reaction from the fine art community whatsoever. I'm very curious to see what they think of it.
Critique is so limiting and emotionally draining.
When I made Nightcrawler, I actually thought that local television news would be offended by what we had done. And I would run into people all the time afterwards saying, oh, no, it's so accurate. And we don't do that. Other people do that. So I'm not really offended. So I'm hoping that the contemporary art world looks at it that way. I should say, last week, I finally caught up with a really wonderful documentary called The Price of Everything on HBO, which is about the contemporary art world. And here are the titans of the industry speaking about the very issues that our film is about. So I'm hoping that they see it as something that's relevant and real.
Dan Gilroy, his new film is Velvet Buzzsaw. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.